But you're now in a league with John Calipari and Rick Barnes and a resurgent Vanderbilt program in Kentucky and Florida, which is the reigning national champion. And so, you don't have to deal with Duke and UNC anymore, but you got to deal with a whole lot else.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get into some more coaching carousel stuff in just a bit. We'll also come back with the list, talk about opening day. More importantly, we had opening night last night, and where you might be able to watch the teams that you actually care about. It feels like we're getting a little bit of clarity on that. Also got to get into the North Carolina job and more. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Program is brought to us by our great friends over at Leaders Credit Union. Leaders Credit Union is federally insured by the NCUA, so that means it's a name that you can trust. It's also a not-for-profit financial institution fully owned by its members and operating for their benefit. Leaders offers full-service banking, including checking and savings accounts, loans, mortgages, credit cards, and state-of-the-art technology to help you move forward. With over 84,000 members strong, Leaders CU is one of the most stable credit unions in the nation, serving the needs of their members. And they've been awarded in the top 10% of the healthiest credit unions nationwide by depositaccounts.com. And they've also been listed in the top 100 credit unions by S&P Global. They've also created a special webpage for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN, where you can learn more about how they can champion your financial story and even waive your membership fee. There are 10 branches across West Tennessee, including the locations in Bartlett and Arlington, and they have access to over 85,000 fee-free ATMs and over 5,000 shared branches worldwide. Make sure you check out their mobile app, where you can review accounts and balances, make payments, and achieve your financial goals. Managing your money has never been easier and more convenient. It's available 24/7. LeadersCU.com/ESPN to learn more today. Jason Smith going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. Before we do that, let's get into the list. The tank. All right, Cobb. It's all coming to plan. I don't know if we're going to catch Dallas again after that devastating win last Wednesday against the Nuggets. But now the Grizzlies squarely in front of the Pelicans. No reason to believe that they're going to fall back behind the Pelicans. They solidify that seventh spot. And after the action in the East last night and the Magic's loss on Tuesday night to Cleveland, Cobb, the Grizzlies are sitting here right now at the 7th spot, and the Magic fall all the way to 10 in the East. Right now, the Grizzlies, if everything went chalk, the 7th and the 13th pick. And picking before Oklahoma City picks twice.
But we're not dead in the race to catch Dallas for 6, are we?
Not dead. But the schedules are so similar, it's going to be tough. Because you look at it, the Grizzlies are 1-9 in their last 10. The Mavs are 2-8 on the
remaining. So the Mavs are playing. They're winning twice as many games.
They are playing 10. Better basketball. Their form is currently better. I thought on Monday night, there's nothing worse. You know, we talked about there's nothing worse than staying up to like watch the Grizzlies and then lose in a competitive environment. I found something worse. Staying up to watch the Mavericks win and then lose in overtime to the Warriors. Like that could have been a big time swing game.
Yeah. Really needed Dallas to win. Need them to keep winning. Dallas only has 9 games left. Grizzlies have 10. There's still plenty of room there. And
so the Mavs have the Spurs once. Lakers, T-Wolves, Suns, Magic, Clippers. God, that could be such a swing game if the Mavs could beat the Magic. Ugh.
Why is Dallas not winning more? Like, Cooper Flagg is still playing. Najee Marshall is still playing. Max Christie is still playing. Like, there's no reason why Dallas shouldn't be more competitive right now.
I think they're kind of doing the same thing the Grizzlies are, where they're basically like playing like 8 guys. And so they just get killed like down the stretch.
I know, but I don't even feel like the Grizzlies are maybe three or four guys who might actually have a future with the franchise still playing at this
point. The other thing I give the Grizzlies credit for, it's not only are they playing with eight guys, they've done a good job of staggering. It's eight guys with no big, so they get killed on the glass. And then they've been very judicious about when to play Ty Jerome. Like, you can't play Ty Jerome in a toss-up game.
No, you'll accidentally win it. That would
That was the Denver game. Ty was awesome. Like,
Ty is probably going to play Friday against Houston,
which is actually a little alarming because they look like a team that absolutely hates each other.
And like a team that doesn't have an actual point guard.
They've always looked like that, but now like they look like they have like internal
problems.
Like they look like the team in August in Major League Baseball that just like they're either going to start a fight with the other team or they're going to have a fight in the dugout.
That's about right.
So,
by the way, Paul Skeens gave up 5 runs in the first inning.
Two-thirds of an inning. Yeah, didn't even get all 3.
His center fielder didn't help him. The center fielder missed an easy can of corn pop fly.
Yeah, O'Neill misjudged one, and then
and he pitched in the game I wanted him to. I mean, he was awesome in both WBC games.
Oh yeah.
So I don't care. Two-thirds of an inning, that feels like a pretty quick hook.
37 pitches.
Are they worried about something arm-related?
I don't think so. I think as soon as he kind of – when you give up 5 runs –
I mean, if you're the Pirates and they fall behind 5, this is a guy that last year was routinely losing 1-0 and 2-1.
Right.
Like, he didn't – like, there was, like, a stretch of, like, 6 weeks where I don't think, like, he had a win and, like, he still had an ERA, like, sub-2.
It was the early Mets Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Cobb for dubbing this Gigi Jackson season. Here's how you know.
Oh, yeah.
Here's how you know how last night was going. The only thing anyone talked about was Gigi's dunk, and then literally, the next play, Wimby just, got revenge, but all anyone cared about was the Gigi dunk.
Yeah, check it out. Last 5, 7 of 15, 9 of 14, 7 of 14, 6 of 15, 8 of 15. He's a metronome, man. It's just 14 or 15 shots, going to make about 45 to 50% of them. This is what GG Jackson was built for.
I mean, you're the one that dubbed it GG Jackson season, and so full marks to you for that. I mean, I'm now at the point where if you could lock this in, the 7th odds and the 13th odds, I'd go to battle with that.
Oh, I'd be totally fine with that. But I wouldn't dismiss hope because, I mean, you were the one banging the drum that 6 is a far better position.
That was before we beat Denver. I told you that was one of the most catastrophic wins of the year.
But it's not off the table, and there are advantages to getting to 6. So, I'm going to continue to
cheer. Oh, no, there's a huge advantage to getting to 6 because the bigger thing is, now, we'll ask this question, has Acuff played himself, into the, is Acuff, now you're at the point, to me, the huge part of, 6 and 7 was you were setting the floor that even if a team jumped you, I don't want to be at that 8 spot, because 8 feels like that's when you get into the Mykal Brown of it all.
Yeah. I have no interest. I mean, and I've said this all along, but my interest in Mykal Brown Jr. is even lower than it was before. After watching a guy who I think could have played, not play in the NCAA tournament. I mean, dude, you have to, where's your pulse? It's the NC freaking AA tournament. You're making millions of dollars to play basketball for this school. They're paying you millions of dollars. You could play, and you're choosing not to. I mean, that is I know, whatever people can explain it away, and blah, 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 blah. I can't wrap my mind around that. Well, I can't wrap my mind around that.
Especially when you consider, the other person that was listed in the same categories, Darren Peterson. It's Darren kept showing up at the end.
Nate Amendt's got a freaking mangled leg, and he's out there playing right now.
He played in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, for what? That one I would have understood. We all saw what happened there. I mean,
is there any chance he thinks about coming back and being, going 1 or 2 next year?
Jeffrey, have you been in
is that the group chat?
Tennessee fan brain.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, Eric and I were talking about, Hasseltine and I were talking about this. If you could come back and play for $5 or $6 million, now, is that what Tennessee's paying him? I don't know. My guess is probably not, but would they pay Would they pay him that to return? Maybe. And it's like, even if it's not Tennessee, maybe he goes, like, I do wonder if there's some guys that would look at it and say, all right, rather than get into this weird late lottery spot, go make a lot of money next year and then get into that draft. Like, I do wonder if that's a decision.
Next year's draft not going to be as good as this one. I think there's actually some wisdom in that. Like, you think about like a Braden Burries. He's getting, no pun intended, buried amongst this group of guards, where if he were to come out next year, I mean, he could be a top five pick. He might be struggling right now to go, you know, what, fringe lottery if he's lucky. So,
I feel like you see him in that mix of like 10 to 15.
And that's a recent rise. I mean, that's because, I mean, he was down there in the 20s for most of the season.
Well, it does it not feel like he's got a big opportunity tonight? Because
huge.
I think, like, I'm not endorsing this way of thinking, but I do also acknowledge, like, that's what we do. If he goes and shuts down the hottest thing in college basketball right now, like, that could change some minds. Because there's a lot of people that will explain it away by going like, well, yeah, he didn't have monster numbers, but look at the rest of the team.
Right. He kind of gets lost in the mix a little bit on what's a really good team without a single dominant, individually dominant player. Like, that Arizona team is deep. It can be a different guy every night. Burries doesn't hit a ton of threes. Like, there's not as much sizzle to his game, but he checks all the boxes. He's just not as flashy as the five or six guards who are above him on the big board, right? So, I mean, massive opportunity tonight. I think it's a huge opportunity for Malik Thomas, the secondary scorer for Arkansas. I mean, this was a guy that was a first-round pick in a lot of mocks going into the year. And he's been really good. He's been solid. Like, he's not been unbelievable, but he's been solid. And I think this is like a decision-making sort of game for him tonight. Like, if he has a huge game, he goes for 25, Arkansas advances, you're going to see him start to get back into that first round. But if not, he could be the perfect example of what you're talking about. Like, the guy who comes back and all of a sudden he's a lock to go in the lottery next season. Because that class, I mean, the freshman class in college basketball next year, would love to be wrong, but I don't think it's going to hold a candle to this class. And so that's why we've got to kind of appreciate, you know, these young studs while we got them. And then I think, yeah, like, Arkansas could benefit big time if Malik Thomas comes back. And then the other one who I think checks that box, who I wouldn't be stunned if he got in the portal, Tonde Yesufu, who just got overlooked at Baylor because Baylor stunk. But, like, this is a huge kind of wing with a lot of scoring ability, defensive versatility, still got to put it together. So he's not going to go in the lottery this year. But, like, if that guy were to come back or get in the portal, whoo, buddy, like, that would be a bidding war of the highest order.
Well, kind of along the same lines, at a maybe a more rich man's variety, I don't know how much of Houston you watched, because I know you were on assignment and you could basically watch the first 10 minutes of both Houston games and be like, all right, I can move on from this. Kingston Flemings has been good in the tournament. It's just the numbers are not overwhelming, and he's kind of like in that same mold where it's like they've not needed him to score 30. But he's been, I've watched every second of their games. He's been very good.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that Flemings has over Acuff is the defense. Not that, I mean, Flemings isn't like a big guy, but, you know, the film is out there. The cut-ups are out there on Acuff.
Well, really, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right? I mean,
although now I'm now having to do the spin zone. If this really is true that he's doing this rise to where he could crack the top four, I might have to start blasting everyone and blasting the defensive issues, because I don't actually care about it. But the other reason why I think it's huge to get up as high as you can, okay, let's say Acuff does move up. Well, now you could get into Flemings territory. And to me, like, that's, if you tell me the Grizzlies come out of this draft with Flemings or Acuff, cool, sign me up.
Yeah, no doubt. How do you feel on Keaton Walkler?
So, Harrington's in my mind. I admit I've got early onset Chris Wallace, and I can't unsee the wasn't a top 150 player. I openly admit that, and I also acknowledge that that can be dumb because my favorite basketball player on the Grizzlies right now played, what, D3 his first year out of high school? Now, it's also COVID, and he wasn't a part of, like, the big recruiting cycle. Like, he could – there are other justifications. My biggest problem with Wagler is that when you watch Illinois play, do you ever feel like he's 1,000% like the best player?
No.
And with the other guys, like even with like Flemings on Houston, is he maybe like the single most integral person on Houston's roster? No, but there are moments when you watch the game and you go, that guy's the best player on the floor.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, Wagler is a little bit more anonymous, and I think benefits greatly from the way the team and the roster is constructed, because it's really hard when you're playing against Illinois to devote the full weight of your defense to one player, because there's so many different weapons on that team, and they require so much, each one of them requires so much attention from a defense that it's easier for a guy like Keaton Wagler to get shots and to kind of get into a position where, you know, he can be the one to hurt you, right? Whereas if he were the clear-cut best player on any other team, right, like he might not have the same sort of efficiency because there would be a lot more attention placed on him and it would be a lot harder for him to get shots. But he plays in a system that is tailor-made for a good shooter to get good looks. So, well, yeah, I think more system and team dependent in terms of his NBA future.
So Hurd's obviously a little biased because he played for him, but Hurd has mentioned, and he, like, this wasn't even like a knock on Acuff. Acuff does take a lot of the oxygen out. LeBaron Fylon has been awesome the last like 3 weeks.
I'm glad you brought him up.
But we were discussing this with him because he's like, you know, why do you think that is? I do kind of think part of it is, though, we just think guys in Nate Oates' system are going to get numbers.
Well, he's also benefited from the fact that Aiden Holloway is not playing because, I mean, everything goes through Fylon now, and he's handling that really, really well.
But, I mean, he was unstoppable against Texas Tech. I mean, you can say it's Hofstra or whatever, but, like, he just decided he was taking over the game in the second half, and it was night-night. He was very good down the stretch. I don't know. The other thing I was thinking about with Wagler is, to your Burries point, I think if you asked me would I rather have Burries or Wagler, I'd say Burries.
Yeah, I think they kind of do different things. I almost look at Keaton Wagler more as a shooting guard or more as like a combo guard.
But see, like, to me, like, that's yet again, the other issue is, and I understand we're supposed to take best available. Don't get me wrong. We always do. He feels kind of redundant for what a lot of the Grizzlies are.
He feels like a higher ceiling version of Jalen Wells.
Yeah. Or like a richer man's version of like Cam Spencer.
Yeah. I mean, the distribution is there. Like, I'm open to being wrong. Like, I'm open to being wrong on Wagler.
Listen, I've been very clear. Whoever they end up taking, I will talk myself into. Like, that's just what we do. But I'd rather have ones that are, I don't really have to talk myself into. I'd rather
the only one who I would just grimace and Zaire Williams 2.0, Mykel Brown. Like, I know slightly different positions, but just the. I'm with you.
Like, the other thing is, like, for those that want to totally ignore the fact that my guy has to play 40 minutes and he's the ultimate offensive engine, for all the haters out there that keep showing all these drive-bys and blow-bys of Acuff, if he shoots 45% from three, y'all, it doesn't matter. You know who really... I'm so sick of the narrative like that Steph got good at defense. No, he didn't. They did a better job of hiding him. Like, but he's still like a transformative basketball player.
Yeah. It's like, everybody loved Ja. Ja never played defense. Ja couldn't even hit threes. You know, Acuff can.
Yeah. Like, I'm now finding myself, though, I'm in the trap of, like, I was so hell-bent on if we could get to seven, I thought that meant you could get Acuff, and now I'm worried that that might not be the case.
Yeah, it might not. But then it'll all change again after the tournament and going into combine season.
Sure.
Like, the narratives will shift in whatever direction. And but, yeah, Acuff could do something to transform his, you know, where he ends up being selected here. Tonight's going to be huge on that front. Burries, Malik Thomas, huge part. I mean, Koa Pete, a forgotten man.
Yeah.
Koa Pete, totally forgotten in this because he was so good.
George loves Koa. Night.
Yeah. Well, and he could be there. Like, if it's 7 and 13, like, he could be there at 13 for the Grizzlies.
You got three guys
who could be potential Grizzlies draft picks playing tonight.
I ran one sim of the lottery.
Well, while I'm here, let me go ahead and do that.
And I ran it in the mock draft section, so it just, like, picks players there. Ended up with 2 and 13. So that would have been for them AJ DeMansta and Hans Steinbeck.
I'm down with that.
I am incredibly down with that.
I just simmed the Grizzlies got 4 and 13. So I can do that on the big board?
Yeah, if you go over to where it says mock draft on the mock draft tab, you can sim the lottery over there.
Oh, I just got Cam Boozer and Kareem Lopez. Kareem Lopez does not feel like somebody the Grizzlies would take. Because Steinbach is right there below him.
That he does not feel like someone the Grizzlies would take. Was that very raw prospect coming from overseas? Yeah.
Like, they've done, like, the stash thing, but, like, they're not stashing at 13.
No.
Boy, I'd be okay with Cam Boozer. His stock, interesting thing to watch, because could he be passed by Darius Acuff? I think the way Cam Boozer has played the last couple of weeks has opened some eyes in a not-so-good way. The limitations of his athleticism on display, he has looked fatigued, I think, at points in the second half of games here as of late. I'm just saying, like, is there a chance that maybe he isn't the third overall pick, as we've all assumed? Could he slip to 5 or 6? Like, and I'm not even saying, like, oh, maybe the Grizzlies could get him. If they do, great. But I think he's the one to watch. Like, if you're trying to do the Darius Acuff moves up thing, well, he's got to pass somebody. Cam Boozer, it could be overtakeable, I should say. Like, there might be something there because he just doesn't have the NBA-level explosivity. And for a long time, I was kind of okay with that. But then you see him run up against, like, a really good shot blocker and some length in the paint, and it's like, oh, yeah. Like, there's a lot of NBA teams that have length in the paint, you know, and that could be a problem.
Yeah. I know I've told you my comp for him is Kevin Love. It just feels like the exact same thing. Like, UCLA, you know, after the Tigers beat him, but, like, UCLA, like, Kevin Love was just getting nitpicked down the stretch. It does feel that's kind of what's happening with Cam Boozer. It's like, does he wind up having the highest ceiling of this draft class? It's like, probably not, but, like, the only way I see this guy not playing, like, 10 to 15 years in the NBA is if, like, he just has, like, debilitating injuries. It's like,
oh, I know, but you got a nitpick. Like, you're investing the future of your franchise into one of these players. Like,
yeah, but, like, I don't know. I feel like he has been... Like, we do not nitpick DeBansa. He's the one guy that seems impervious to all criticism.
Yeah, which is why I think he should be number one overall. I'm Team AJ.
I mean, I'm only Team AJ because, like, in the end, like, he's gonna play.
That team crumbled around him, and he was still averaging, what, like, 29, 30?
I mean, he had 35 in an L. And literally,
where the rest of the team scored 35.
The opposing head coach was on sideline interviews going, like, what do you want us to do?
Yeah, or, like, let him beat us. Who cares? Like, And we're just going to make sure nobody else.
That's the obituary for that BYU team. And I understand they had significant injury, but it's like, he's awesome. The rest of them stink.
Yeah. My big board would be AJ 1, Peterson 2, tentatively still Cam Boozer at 3. And I might already be there with Acuff at 4, Caleb Wilson at 5.
That's who I was going to ask you about with Caleb Wilson. Is he right now, just because of how much time he missed, kind of like the biggest mystery in this class?
I don't know. I feel like we got a large enough sample size of Caleb Wilson in North Carolina to understand who he is, which I think it's not so much about what Caleb Wilson is when it comes to where will he be selected.
Right.
It's like, maybe what is he not? And he's not like an elite shot creator. The perimeter jumper is very much a work in progress. So there's just a certain limitation, I guess, on what he can be. Is he a hub and a facilitator offensively, or is he basically just a really athletic, defensively versatile four-man who, you know, is going to be awesome in the paint? Like, is he basically just like a turbocharged version of Brandon Clark? You know, and that's not a bad player, but that's the floor.
Well, like, you know, probably not quite as big. But I mean, that's kind of the same knocks that Jaren had.
Yeah, so I like Caleb Wilson. I think you could vary in what you think of him. You could make the case for him to be number 3 overall. You could make the case for him to be 7 or 8. Like, you know,
that was just more of a general question. I love Caleb Wilson.
All I'm saying about the importance of the 7 odds, I've simmed 3 straight times. We've moved up into the top 4 every time.
Save some of that luck.
We have to send.
He's not getting the envelope.
We have to send EP, right?
We got to send EP, right?
I mean, the last time we did this, I think we went from 8 to 2.
Yeah. Didn't he have on some special socks or something?
Socks, baby.
Yeah.
I'll see him on Friday. I can, or tomorrow. I can work on that.
I will be very disappointed in the organization if he's not the, like, if he goes and it doesn't work out, fine, so be it. But it's like, let's not leave it up to, if we think we have something lucky, like, let's go and do it. Who was there was a running back that Leach had at Washington State that went on the Price is Right and won, and Leach would talk about him. He was the, you know, Leach was big on don't have captains. Like, your seniors are your captains, but he had guys for the coin toss, and this running back always called the coin toss. He's like, why? He goes, hey, he's lucky as hell. He's like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's like, we have that. Let's send it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But it's like, none of us are going to blame EP. But let's not leave it to chance that if he's not there and they don't move up, well, then you start to wonder, well, what if he would have been there?
Well, if there's ever a time to be superstitious in professional sports, it's the lottery. It's literally a game of chance.
That is the whole point of it.
Jamal Morrow,
yeah. He's incredibly lucky. He meant it like as a matter of fact. It was just, it's like, why do you have him? He goes, well, he's lucky. You see him on Price is Right. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Start your day with J&J. The J&J Show airing right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Every weekday from 9 until noon, Jason Smith is the co-host of that program. You can follow him on the Everything app at JasonSmith929. Jason, we have not spoken to you since we had the last 2 press conferences. How are you feeling about the messaging that's coming out from the University of Memphis following the decision to keep Penny?
I think some of it good. Some, you know, is what you needed to hear is that, you know, it's a real reflective look and Penny's ready to you know, take the help. I think the way it's got to put it, Penny came to me and said he needs help. So that's all good. The concerning part was obviously, you know, the media's role in this and sort of how Penny sees that as you can help and how, you know, we talked about this on my show. Clearly talked about with Parth, you know, this season took a toll on him and that we seem to be back to a Penny that two summers ago was very defensive and thought that the criticism of his team and in that season coming off that debacle of a second half of the season, thinking it was personal, and he lashed out. And then you had Tim Duncan and Ed Scott come in to those jobs, and we've talked about this, pour into him. Penny talked about that. Those guys saying Penny was willing to turn the page and just focus on the controllables, and you had this Penny wasn't necessarily worried about the things he couldn't control, and you get back to what you just asked me, that presser, and it was back to you guys are just focused on the negative. You know, when are you going to focus on the positive? So some defensiveness that, you know, in the position that he's in coming off, you know, not just his worst year, but the program's worst year and whatever it is, 50 years, 69, 70. I didn't expect to hear that. Now, maybe having, you know, and the word is, and certainly Hitman Hoops is one of those that's had it out there, a Tony Madlock, somebody who Penny trusts so much and was a part of this thing, obviously, from the get-go, guy that played with him, but I think, too, a guy that Penny respects in terms of what Tony has done in the 3 decades-plus he's been in college basketball, will get you back to a Penny who little bit, you know, has a little bit of woo-saw that calms down, because I think this all matters, because you saw a Penny Hardaway that looked overwhelmed this year, whether it was you know, in a game-to-game situation or just in terms of, now I feel like I got to take the defense back, which he was saying toward the end of the season. You got to get calm, cool, and collected and worry about what you control and delegate some of this stuff. So perhaps what's coming out of his mouth, not so much important, Jeffrey, in terms of the quotes and what was said, as what comes next. Is it going to be Tony Madlock? Are you guys going to get this GM in place to a point that he can help you this season? Because Cobb can tell you better than anybody, the portal's already moving, even though it's not technically open. You don't want to have to get too far behind. Ed Scott put out the window of 7 to 10 days. We're on day 9. You know, those things in terms of the actions and the hires are going to make, in terms of whether or not next year will be a success, that'll be more impactful than what was said. But that, it did strike me, Jeffrey. There was one thing he said, though, that I think is super important, too, because, you know, you could get to this point, and Penny addressed it. If this program has to fire me, and we've talked about the ending, a lot of it this year, or potentially the ending, a lot of it this year was based on the buyout and whether or not Memphis could afford to do it. But we've talked about afterward, and the difference between Penny and Larry Finch, Memphis and this program still needs a relationship with Penny. So how it ends matters here, because Penny had been an ambassador. Penny had literally given millions to that university. And so from that standpoint, hearing Penny say that, even basically, I'm paraphrasing, even if I'm fired, I'm still going to support this program. I'm still going to be, you know, right there trying to help push it, get back, you know, trying to push it back. Important, because, again, whether Penny succeeds or not, at some point he's going to be gone, and it's going to be important that you have Penny the supporter and not Penny who's looking at the program as the enemy, someone, you know, my hometown program did me wrong. You didn't need that. Not that it was going to necessarily determine all out success for you, but Penny's going to be present in this city and you want him supporting you. So to hear that, another one of the encouraging things. I'm hopeful it doesn't get to that point, but we've talked so much through it and that relationship and how, you know, unique it is. You still need Penny, even if you move off Penny in ways, in terms of donations and things like that. You've talked about it, Jeffrey. You don't have a, you know, huge pool of donors right now. I think that's part of the issue, is are you tapped out with some of the folks that you've gone to? So in terms of the presser itself, some of those things that were said, those were some of the things that stuck out. But what I'm really curious about is what comes next in terms of these hires. That's what's going to determine the success or not of next season.
One of the things that's interesting to me, Jason, is the fact that we've already got a commitment from Julius Thedford to return. I think William Horton as well. You know, on some level, you might have thought, well, maybe they would wait for the GM before deciding who's going to be on next year's team. But there was that other part of the presser with Penny and Ed Scott, which was, hey, we got to get the ball rolling quickly. We can't wait around. You know, so like, I just don't really know what to make of that. Like, if we believe a GM is coming, then why are we already putting together next year's roster without him? I don't know. It just seems a little like an interesting dynamic there. And it gets to what you mentioned a second ago, is like, is this GM? Is he going to get here in time to really help with the 26-27 roster? Because, man, I mean, the portal may not be officially open yet, but there sure are a lot of players declaring their intention to enter it whenever it does open.
Or is that GM going to just essentially be backloading the roster? That's the way that we had Hitman Hoops on with us this week, and we were talking about, you know, this hire particularly. And so much work seemingly has been done. It's not just, you know, it's not just the two, I think, that you know you've got in, obviously, with Thetford and Wharton that you mentioned. It's sounding like Bradshaw, Quante Berry are priorities. And this is happening again. And you're talking about guys, Bradshaw be his second year. Quante Berry could have opportunities as a role player elsewhere. You got to figure that he's expecting a starting spot. That's already seemingly been worked on. And to that point, and that's the way that Hitman phrased it, if you get this AD, even in this timeline of 7 to 10 days, it sounded like kind of backload roster work and with what you've got ahead. And here's the other thing. You know, Cobb, you mentioned Thetford. I thought, though, that was a smart way to go for what he gave you last season, the energy he played with. And here's the thing. In a day and age where you got to shop smart, Thetford, you know, a lot of times in these relationships, you're trying to figure out if money is the only thing that motivates them. It matters to Thetford playing in front of his hometown in Memphis. And while he'd earned a raise, I think, from the way he'd played last year, at one point he was leading in rebounding, you know, from a perimeter position, essentially, even though he got moved around. You want those guys who might be willing to give you a little bit of the hometown discount, but even if they've earned more, it's going to be about more in terms of the motivation than just the money. You need to find those guys. I also looked at Curtis Gibbons while the season was going as one of those guys too. That said, now you look at where he is going into year three, having been at LSU and Memphis, probably looking for that starting spot, and you have to ask yourself, was he good enough, right? Can I promise Curtis Gibbons a starting spot when basically my last few league guards have been, what, P.J. Haggerty, Kendrick Davis, you know, Javon Quinterly? Is Curtis Gibbons ready for that, you know, in what I'm sure he expects to be an increased role? Back to the point, Cobb, you've done clearly, whether it's Penny, whether it's Tim Duncan helping him with it, whether it's Daryl Brown, who sounds like he's been right now a part of this process on that staff, this work is happening. So, yeah, you know, you go through that GM interview, which have been happening, you figure, the last week or two, or hopefully longer than that. Surely part of their plan in terms of them trying to interview with you had to be their connections to some players. But that's the point, is this GM going to be involved with that lead guard that you're going to go get because you've decided, okay, for whatever reason, hey, I'm just throwing a scenario at that. Curtis, what he wants is too much from us, right? For what he showed us this year, we can't invest that much. Are you going to do that, find that lead guard with the GM? Is Penny doing that now? And so that's why I'm eager to see and expecting, you know, some of this stuff to unfold pretty quickly here, because you'd like to seemingly have everybody on the same page. You don't want this GM working on next year. Penny wanted this GM now. And so that's why we thought it was so important to sort of be working on that stuff in February and early March. And hopefully Cobb, it gets done. What's clearly doable, and I continue to say it, is, you know, whether Penny's got a GM that's doing the back half or involved in the front half, you know, get Tony in here, put together a roster on $4 to $5 million that can win the American and get back in the tournament. I mean, at least get back to what the floor should be. Stabilize things as much as you can, and then go from there. I really think there is a path that's doable. Listen, you'll have Chris Mack and Wes Miller now having a little something to say about it, but in the end, that's a good thing for the American, those hires, and even for Memphis, because hopefully now those will represent opportunities in the American that you didn't have previously. You know, you need more good teams and more good opportunities. So hopefully that continues. Obviously, you know, South Florida this year was improved under Hodgson. I mean, just look at him turning that thing, you know, one and done over there. But you need that program to want to continue its success, and clearly in hiring Chris Mack, I think they're trying to and hoping to. And hopefully it's all of those things can help Memphis just do what it's supposed to do, the floor. You know, be one or two in the American, get back to the NCAA tournament, and you go from there. I mean, that's the way out for Penny Hardaway. It can be done, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see who he does it with.
Jason, from one Jason to another, friend of the program, Wednesday guest Jason Munns, quote tweeted Jeff Duncan, the Times-Picayune columnist, from NOLA.com. Big story here. Master P out at the University of New Orleans after one season. Master P leaves his role supporting the University of New Orleans basketball team, school says, and Jason quote tweets it with the thinking emoji. Do you think Jason is thinking that Master P might be driving up I-55 headed about 5 hours north?
Man, so I haven't talked to John since we got off the show, other than a couple of texts about something else. But he mentioned on the show that he'd heard a name on a GM and that it seemed close. But and he just said, and I'm gonna leave you there and just tease you with it. And it, you know, we talked about the name and what it would do or not. What I remember about him saying, and we quickly moved on, was that it would be somebody credible, that it would bring credibility at least. That not necessarily a name would be, you know, oh wow, yeah, or but if I recall, it was credibility. And I'm just, does that fit that description? For the little bit of info I've got here. Is that the way you go? I'm not sure there if that would be the credible option I'm looking for, but they seem to get along quite a bit in terms of their interactions. I mean, who's not going to get along with Master P? But it's two celebs. I guess I could say, well, I wouldn't be shocked at this point, but I'm hoping for something that's a little bit more credible, a little bit more tied to agents, so that I know is going to bring players in here. Now, Master P's bringing his sons and stuff, and I don't know how many more basketball playing ones he's got. Maybe that's a different story. That is a connection to players.
Well, I was wondering if Master P brings his own money.
I mean, why? Because he believes so much in Penny Hardaway, who could be fired at the end of this season? Like, I just wouldn't understand the business. Like, I get it for him in New Orleans. Like, that's where he's from and everything else. But all of a sudden, there's this connection to Penny. You feel like, and I'm gonna bring my money to that in a situation as shaky as this season was for Memphis? I'm just,
well, what if it's not necessarily, you know, dipping into Master P's account, but, you know, he still has a lot of business relationships. What if it's bringing in money that way?
Yeah, maybe so. And again, I would say doing it for New Orleans is one thing. Doing it for Memphis and all those business relations now, all of a sudden willing to seeing an opportunity with Memphis. Usually when you're getting those guys to invest, you want a return on investment, whether it's his money, their money that he's asking for, whatever else. And I don't know. Maybe that he is a good businessman. And if that's what Penny Hardaway and Ed Scott's looking for in that spot, I don't know. I would want somebody that's done it longer. Probably has got a little bit more of a complete plan, but hey, man, you got Penny Hardaway, the celebrity coach. Just go, you know, it wouldn't be shocking, I suppose, if you've got Master P, the celebrity GM. Boy, would that be a story. I'm not about the headlines and the fun stuff, man. I'm all about trying to get this thing skinned, and I'd rather do it with probably somebody more experienced.
Those would have to be
the two richest coaches in college basketball, right? A GM, like, Master P's worth like $250 million.
He also got a key to the city of Memphis one time from Willie Harrington. So he's literally got
there. You
a key
go,
to
Jason.
I had no idea.
When did that happen?
That's
what Jim and I said.
What? For what? Yeah, I can't remember what he had done.
Okay, hold on. I'll tell you. Master P received the key to the city of Memphis. The first was in 2008, presented by Mayor Willie Harrington for his work with inner city youth. More recently, in January of 2026, he was awarded the key to Shelby County for his 16-plus years of consistent community impact.
Man,
I have no recollection of that happening this year. Do you, Jason?
I'm not familiar with his work, and I commend him for his work with the youth in Memphis. I've just never been affiliated or covered any of those programs. I'm not doubting it whatsoever. I don't remember the 2026 Shelby County. I remember when they tried to give one, if I'm not mistaken, to Drake, and it, you know,
yeah,
it was kind of a mess. But you know, we do hand these out quite often, and so the fact that it's gotten by me, that should be of no surprise to anyone.
I'm trying to remember, like,
two keys to, you've gotten a key to the county and a key to the city. Master P,
that's right.
I mean, he's a second son, basically, at this point, right behind Penny Hardaway. Maybe this is all coming together, guys.
I mean, I'm just like you, Jason. I'm not trying to belittle his involvement with the youth, but I was here in January of 2026. I have no recollection of that happening.
Yeah, I know we would have talked about it on the program.
Right.
We talked about his, you know, we were talking about his involvement in college basketball this year. So that one got by me. Guys, I'm hoping this is, you know, whatever that is that Munz tweeted is not a suggestion that this is the way. Again, I don't think, I just think you need something, a more sound plan. But I don't know. Maybe Tony Madlock can balance it all out, man, and bring back some seriousness to this thing. When we've talked about, we've kind of used that word about getting serious about all this, whether it's with the hires, your assistants, all of them having real carved out roles. that the hiring Master P just wouldn't fall into my, you know, sort of category of seriousness in terms of fixing this thing. Well, but I would be happy to be wrong in that situation. I just want to win the American and get back to the dang tournament. I'm not asking for much.
You know what? It reminds me of the quote from last week, the press conference that they did about involving a faculty member that is writing an algorithm to help them sort through the 3,500 or whatever the number of players is in the transfer portal. On the surface, it's like, this is an institution of higher learning. To act like that there are not smart people that don't know what they're doing would be disingenuous. But it, like, optically, like, it's like,
That, there are services now, and they're taking over throughout college basketball. Cobb might know the name of them. John's run them by me. There's a couple out there. Now. Just pay the money and do it. Don't cut the corners if this is any sort of semblance of that. You don't need to go out and find your own professor and find your own formula. There are now apparently services that do this for you, certainly help you narrow it down and dig in deeper to these players in terms of what you're looking for, matching that up with these guys, not having the situation like you did this year with the forward that you have to push off the team, quitting on his second team in 2 years. I mean, that's at least what they sell. And so, you know, if power programs are using that, I don't know why you feel like you have to go out and find your own formula on these things unless you feel like, well, we've got to cut corners, you know. And I don't know at this point if in that department is where you need to do the corner cutting. You do that on some of these, you know, guys that you bring in terms of some of these role players, hometown discounts. Can you get your son back so you can, you know, do that one a different way? That's the way seemingly you go about this. But, again, those are smarter men than me and including Master P. So if it's all part of it, man, I just hope it's successful.
All right. Have you solidified what a successful draft for the Grizzlies would be in your mind?
Yeah, I think that's thinking about having two lottery picks. I was listening to you guys.
I know it's so enticing, isn't it?
Well, it's easier now because you've got that, you know, right now with where Orlando is. And if you look at those standings, they're sitting in 10th. And it's so much easier to envision them now falling out of the play-in, either losing in that first game, perhaps, or even if they won, you know, having to get by the loser of the 7-8. Now, those teams are all jumbled up.
Yep.
But Orlando's the one that's struggling the most, having lost 6 straight, including one to Indiana, which had lost 16. They're the most meh of those teams. Paul George and Embiid actually looked pretty good last night. Now, the Heat, that's a question. Charlotte Hornets, we know that's an upward trajectory the way they played the whole second half of the season. My point is, that's starting to really look like a lottery pick. First couple of times,